Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
It's harder to focus than ever these days. Thankfully, C4 has reinvented the energy drink game with C4 Smart Energy, the only energy drink clinically proven to provide enhanced mental focus, containing 200 milligrams of natural caffeine, a blend of vitamins and zero sugar. It was formulated to support your well-being and help you feel your best, all while enhancing mental focus. From your brain to your body, C4 Smart Energy does it all. And tastes amazing. Look for Smart Energy in the beverage aisle at your local Kroger, Albertsons, and Safeway grocery stores. C4 Smart Energy. Stay focused.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 407. Some fun things coming up on the Nerdist YouTube channel. We're going to be posting some new episodes of All-Star Celebrity Bowling. We bowled against Team World's End with Edgar and Simon and Nick Frost and a surprise fourth guest, because there were only three of them. So we got the whole Cornetto trilogy and a fourth that was phenomenal. So that'll be going up soon. The Jimmy Fallon episode will be going up soon. WWE will be going up soon. So that's all over at youtube.com/Nerdist. Click subscribe so you won't miss a second of it. Okay, then. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace.com. It's the all-in-one platform to make fast and easy professional websites, or if you want to make an online portfolio, you can do that as well. For a free trial, 20% off, we're going to give you the offer code Nerdist9. Nerdist9. Yeah, this website thing, it's catching on. So maybe it would be time. You know, if you want to display your writing wares or your artistic wares, or if you want to start some type of a business, or even just a blog for a podcast or whatever, they can do whatever you want. Pretty much at any skill level. It starts at $8 a month, includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. They have amazing support, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's no credit card required. Start building your website now, and when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, like I said, make sure to use the offer code Nerdist9, and then you're going to get 20% off. And you'll also show your support for the Nerdist, so go ahead and do that. Make your digital dream! And we thank Squarespace for their support. This episode is Nat Faxon and Jim Rash. Jim, you may know from Community. Nat Faxon is on a show called Ben and Kate. They also wrote The Descendants, for which they received an Oscar. An Oscar statue. They also have a movie out this summer called The Way, Way Back, which I haven't seen it yet because I never get to go to movies anymore. I have to see things on computers now. Oh, man, I work so much. Luxury problem. But I've heard nothing but amazing things about The Way, Way Back that they also directed together. I've known these guys forever. I dabbled in Groundlings in the 90s before I was like, oh, yeah, improv's not my thing. Off to stand-up! But they're terrific guys and hilarious, and I adore them. So it was a blast to have them on together for the Nerdist Podcast number 407 with Nat Faxon and Jim Rash.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I do.
I
had to throw a bunch of those away at the bottom of my bag too. There were green tea ones, and then I had pumpkin from Halloween.
Fucking pumpkin Kit Kat?
Yeah, the best one is blueberry cheesecake Kit Kats.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, but you probably get those in.
That just sounds made up.
No, you can't actually. You blueberry have to order them on eBay, and they're fucking expensive.
What do you have to order on eBay? Kit Kats?
Yeah.
They sell food on eBay?
There's
the
collector
fat
food.
Guy ever. I
vintage,
didn't know that
vintage food.
Yeah,
the fuck. We gotta go.
When you have to bid, on food, it makes it that much more exciting.
Worst fat guy ever. Who's the best fat guy ever?
John Goodman.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. That's a good answer.
I would have said John Candy.
Yeah. Well, I
but he's not that good at it, clearly.
Yeah. All right.
To be good, you got to stay consistent.
Fuck you and touche.
Two keys. Stay consistent and alive. George Wendt, also a good run for his money.
He's a good runner.
Have you seen him lately?
Is he not that fat anymore?
No, he's just not doing too good.
But he's still alive.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
We are welcome. We are happy to have Nat Faxon and Jim Rash, who I knew.
One applause.
I know,
two.
But there's not really a group.
No, I felt it. We had to go beyond the. We just had to get beyond
which
that.
Is, which
that
is
was
just
the age old
basically
question.
Doing the clap.
Yeah, no,
to
it was
the
action.
Okay, and the cameras are. Synced.
That was one hand clapping.
That's exactly what it sounds like. Yeah. But I knew these guys way back in the Groundlings days when they were actually
good at it and you weren't.
Yes. Well, that's why I don't do improv. Too many bad stand up habits. But I was taking that. I was the improviser who would always. Just immediately when it was my turn to say something, just spit out all of everyone's information. Like, it was just not
right.
Good.
Yeah.
But, there was that one sort of intermediary class where you could just show up on Wednesdays.
Yeah, the WOW class.
Yeah, WOW class. Where you guys were waiting. Usually if you were waiting to get
like
into
an
upper level class and you're waiting for it to open up.
Yes.
Waiting on Wednesdays. Is that what they called it? Was that the WOW?
Work on Wednesdays.
Work out on Wednesdays.
Because sometimes you could just, the way Groundlings works.
I like waiting on Wednesdays.
Because you didn't know.
For a Wednesday.
You could have been waiting for like a year to get into a class, right?
It really is. It's hump day.
Yeah.
Were you guys in the main company or the Sunday company?
We met in the Sunday company, and then we both subsequently got into the company about 6 months or a year apart from each other. And then, I just stepped down, so I was there for 13 years.
Yeah.
Damn. Did you step down?
I did, yeah. I stepped down about 3 years ago when I knew it was time. Jim didn't quite know.
No. I felt like, and I was wrong, they wanted more.
And
guys,
that
I've
was the
a,
first year. No, and like, well, 2 years, you'll get this 2 years.
Like, no, it's like, oh, you know, you're like that frat guy who hung around too long. And they're like,
you know. Guys, where are we going to go now?
What are we doing next? Yeah. Hey, how about this character? No, we've seen that mechanic character.
You're scaring all the girls.
Yeah.
So we all go and hang out the snake bit afterwards. We're
underage.
Are we still doing that?
Is that still a thing?
Oh yeah, the snake pit afterwards.
Snake pit. Yeah.
It's so the Groundlings, like, there are only a certain number of spaces, and so if you have a permanent space, you technically could stay there forever if you wanted.
You're
right?
Made
forever. You are made. Yeah.
And so it's a generous thing to do if you're not going to be performing a lot to vacate.
Yes, we have requirements, but for the most part, you could just hang out. You just have a requirement to fill.
I do
it's
love
like 2 weeks a year.
2 weeks a year.
Two weekends a month.
You know, just show
month.
Up for a while.
You're in the Groundling Reserves.
Yeah, you're in the Groundling Reserves. You'll go overseas to nowhere in particular.
Do you earn college credit?
Yeah, you get college. Oh, nice. These are all the perks. Mm-hmm. You get a lake house.
I did like going. I haven't been to the Groundlings in ages, but I would just stare at the wall and just see like Pat Morita, like the pictures of the Groundlings from the 70s and the 60s.
Yes.
Jim.
I was in charge of doing the photo wall, so it's you see Pat, and then you just see me.
Hey, Jim, that's good spacing.
Hey, yeah, see? Yeah. It's really good spacing, and a lot of me.
Do you miss it at all?
Yeah, well, I mean, I still improvise over there, you know, now and then. And
do you miss improvising with Pat Morita?
Oh my God, we used to.
You and Pat.
No,
do you remember that?
We had our version of Who's on First, and it was like
Do you remember that time right before you were supposed to do the scene and someone hit your knee and then he had to like do the thing to
yes yeah and that became the inspiration
that became
for Karate Kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
We never get credited for that, you know.
I always wonder if there was ever any because Groundlings really used to be the feeding ground for SNL. I mean the garden for SNL, and I always wondered sometimes if other members of the group were ever sort of like, hey, yeah, that technically character did technically start here, but it was a group effort that someone then just took and then made into a character.
Yeah, I don't remember like someone saying they have a something that they claimed. I mean, you know, obviously we'll see a lot of stuff on there that they did on the stage, sometimes even like a version of a sketch.
Yeah.
And then often, you know, sometimes they'd reach out to you if you wrote something with them. Like a number of us have done sketches with, say, Will Forte or something, and they did that sketch, and someone else is playing, you know, my part or someone else's part.
Oh, so they say, like, hey, is it okay?
I mean, they, you know, they pay you for that. Yeah, they pay you for that. Yeah. So you're sort of credited at the end when it's quickly, you know, and it's going so fast you don't read anything, but you're in there. So for the most part, I don't think anyone ever, like, said, ha-ha, I'm taking my Mountain Man. We all chipped in on Mountain Man.
One of your lesser known characters. Mountain Man.
I've already said Mechanic and Mountain Man. I mean, clearly these are not my characters.
What? Are you sure?
Well, we gotta climb this mountain.
Wait a minute.
That's a great mechanic. Wait, is that mechanic?
No, he happened to be at a mountain.
Oh, okay. He
was... Mountain Man is like, boy, oh boy, my car broke down.
You ever notice how there's no auto shops on the tops of mountains?
See,
I'm gonna be the guy.
Yeah.
Do you did you like the did you ever look at any of the other comedy groups and sort of the philosophies, or did you like the Groundlings kind of? It was like more character emphasis, right?
When we came through, there wasn't all the options right now. You know, when we first got here, it was Groundlings, Acme, and Second City had been here, but they weren't there anymore. And so while we were students, you know, UCB, Second City back again, IO, all these places hadn't opened shop. So really your exposure to improv was a little bit more limited. And now obviously there's an explosion. Yeah. And I think the great thing about it is it's not necessarily – look, the universal rules that you're learning at a basic intermediate level are probably all consistent with any of those theaters. You know, I've performed at all of them in different ways, you know, in their styles. Yeah. No one can see what you're doing, so why don't you just say it? Yeah. Sorry.
I'm a master improviser.
I hope you guys can hear me over the toot of this horn. No, I'm saying, like, I appreciate all the different styles that people, you know, have done, from long form to all those kind of things. I think Groundlings is mainly, once you get into sketches, about it's a character-based improv. I mean, that's probably the, you know, if you're going to label each one.
It's also a wonderful training ground as far as writing goes. I mean, you really are forced into writing all your own material, you know, either by yourself or with other people in the class or company that you're in. And so you're just sort of thrust into that world. And if you've never done it before, it's a great, you know... It's a great learn-by-doing kind of experience.
But the Sunday Company, you have to write a new show every week, right?
For the most part. I mean, some sketches, you know, will carry over probably for, I don't know, but anywhere between like 2 to 6 weeks, you know. But you are constantly writing, and the show is constantly changing.
It's always filtering and changing,
So you could be doing some horrible bit, and then, you know, you're like, oh, I got to write more because this...
Because that got cut. That was usually Nat and my pieces. We're not going to do choir boys anymore.
Mechanic choir boys.
Mechanic choir boys. Yeah. I stay in like a safe zone. Choirs, Mountain Men, and Mechanics.
Are those really safe?
No, that's like literally when I, you know, any of my students, if I'm teaching, I say, look, here's all you need to know about characters. You're either a choir boy, a mountain man, or a mechanic. And anything outside of that is just a variation on those.
People don't know anything outside those two.
But I want to do this, you know, space alien, mountain man. Next. You know,
like, does he live in a mountain? Then it kind of... Do they
have mountains on Saturn? Boom.
Does it just have to be incorporated into the sketch in some way? Or is it
they
just...
don't? Well, see. Oh, okay. But see, you weren't in my class, so I called out.
I like the student who corrects the comedy teacher with science. About Saturn.
Well, no, in my face.
Welcome to Nerdist, guys.
Yeah.
We are in the fucking name.
We'll break down all the improvised comedy. I dated Andrea Savage, who was in this. Was Andrea in your Sunday Company?
No, I directed when she was in the Sunday Company.
She was right after
us, I think.
Yeah.
And then I remember going to these, you know, like these mega Groundlings. It was like a July 4th where it was every Groundling in just this cluster of.
Yeah. When we all get together, it's called Mega Groundlings.
And we form one beast.
That has to fight Mecha Groundlings.
Right, yeah.
It has to fight Mecha UCB.
Yeah. We have a cage match coming up. So.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I like physical comedy bouts.
Yeah.
Those are always the best kinds.
I think it works so well.
I mean, the slap fighting is unrivaled.
It's just a lot of prop comedy.
It's just, instead of like a dance-off, it's a stage fight-off.
Yeah. Yes. This is space working off.
Yeah.
If the space work of your weapon is really good, then you move on.
Yeah.
When did you guys start? I mean, because obviously a lot of performers have this kind of parallel writing career because it can supplement the acting career. But it's worked out quite well for both of you on both sides. So when did that? When did you guys actually start writing and pitching? Was it television first? Or did you immediately start doing film?
Mm-hmm. No, we got into TV. We had been in the company probably for 4 years, I think, and were more frustrated as actors wanting to do different roles or do things that, you know, people in the industry didn't see us doing, you know. And so we were friends and enjoyed writing together. And so we're like, oh, why don't we write a TV show? And so we wrote a pilot and put it up on the Groundlings stage as sort of like a presentation. And it did not go well. But
what was the pilot?
It was called
Crossing
The Leaves.
Yeah. Crossing Jordan.
Totally.
But not the one that became a show and went for many years.
It was actually about crossing the River Jordan.
Yeah. It was River Jordan.
Yeah. And Jim and I played Arabs.
We hadn't been, so our specifics were
that
weird.
That was back when you could do that and it was okay.
Yes.
Yeah. No,
Pat Morita played the Pharaoh.
Have you ever seen a mountain man trying to cross a river? It's not pretty.
It's not really pretty.
I mean, again, these are the types of things you could do in a pre-9/11 world.
Yeah. You know, and then, you know. So, and there were, anyway.
So we
didn't go well.
It didn't go well, but we took a nugget of that pilot that was centered around sort of a Jim's being adopted.
How dare you tell these people?
Oh, no.
How dare you?
Oh,
how far does this reach? No, we did write about being adopted. It was called Adopted. So we wrote this.
Funny enough.
Huh? What?
Strangely enough, it was called Adopted.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to think out of the box.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably kind of funny now, right?
Yeah.
The man that names his Mountain Man character, Mountain Man.
Yeah, look, these are, you get it.
A mountain man would be adopted by wolves.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. And the mechanic would help him find his biological mother. It writes itself. Okay. So we took Adopt, that little element of it, and wrote it, and ended up actually doing that as a pilot at ABC. It was about 2005. So that's
Without us in it. We were told we could not be in the pilot.
But did they break the two gently, or they're like,
No.
Of course you're not going to be in it.
They probably did laugh in our face at first.
We sat around in a conference room at ABC, and we had this big casting meeting, and we were talking about the roles, and it was this sort of like elephant in the room. Like, we hadn't brought it up, and our agents and managers hadn't sort of broached the topic, and mm-hmm. so it was just sort of like, I mean, we don't want to slow the process down, but we would still love to play these parts, you know? And they were sort of ignoring that idea, and so we had this long list of potential actors, and they threw out an actor's name, and they said, what about this guy? And we were like, oh, you know, I don't know, he's a little, like, he's almost too handsome, you know, he's almost too leading man, and the part was for the role Jim was supposed to play. Yeah. And,
I don't take offense at that at all. I know my place. I know my place.
We said he's a little too handsome, you know. And it was as if we had just taken like a shit in the room, and they all looked at each other and said, like, he is not handsome.
Oh,
he is TV ugly.
Oh, is that where your Twitter handle comes from? Rash TV ugly.
TV ugly came from just that expression. And I'm not even TV ugly. I don't even make that list. I just sort of thought that it was a funnier expression to me than what I became to them.
Yes, we sort of did a bit. We did a bit.
I like, said, oh. "Wow, if he is TV ugly, I'd love to see what list that you guys have me on. Like, you know, am I? You know." Passable. TV passable.
If we have to.
If there's no other option.
I mean, the light from the cameras wouldn't,
he's a radio
even,
five.
Wouldn't even capture your face.
Would not show up on film.
You would not show up on film. I mean, that's just the way television works. Yeah, you guys don't even understand.
Just TV, I know. But ugly.
And then one of the guys, one of the head casting guys at the time, basically like stared Jim in the face and he said, Jim, you're not playing this role. We're not going that nebbish. All right, who's next?
Oh my God.
And we were just like, like being verbally punched in the face.
Shit. Oh my God.
Yeah, and it was this weird thing where we discontinued the
audition anyway in a wig.
No, back. And they go, this guy seems nebbish to me. Hold on, let's see. Yes, he's nebbish.
Get him.
Get him. He tried to be attractive on TV. Ah, we got him. Punch his face.
Punch his face.
Make
ruin
him uglier.
Make him uglier. Ruin him more, please.
Send him to cable.
Send him to cable. Yeah. But they, yeah, they. We walked out of that room. I think after the meeting, I was like, "Hey, are you okay, Jim?" Oh,
shit. Hey, we're living the dream, right? Television, right? This is what you wanted. Right?
And it was
like, okay, so I guess we're not playing.
So we're
parts.
Not going to play
okay.
it.
I hope you go back to that casting person and flatten his dick with your Academy Awards.
Well, no.
Well, those are for writing. Oh, God. Yeah.
God, now he's beating me with this. I'm getting uglier and uglier. Yeah, he was, I guess, the bad cop. He was assigned bad cop, and he took that role on.
Willingly. I'll do it. You sure you don't want to?
Yeah. We don't know if they'll say anything. If they do, I'll crush them.
I was going to say it anyway, but now if you guys want me to, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You went the last three times. I know.
There's just something about this guy.
How did that pilot go?
You know, it was it's like bittersweet in the sense we got to shoot a pilot, but it really was, you know, one of those things where everything was sort of working against us, it felt like. It didn't feel like the same show we had written, not necessarily because of our voices, but just, you know, it's one of those things where we were new and green to this, you know, and they instantly lock you in with people to run your show with you, and those people don't necessarily have your vision, but you don't have experience, so how could you possibly know? And it's one of those things where you look back and the regret will always be, we should have been more vocal. We should have spoken up. It might not have helped, but if we had said something, you're right. But that's probably the one that was like the hardest when you sort of look at it. Mm-hmm. We had some great people involved who were great. The moms, and we had Christine Baranski and Bernadette Peters, and there was great actors involved. It just was one of the things that sort of started to fall apart as the week went on.
Yeah. Certainly a great learning experience and opened a lot of doors for us. And I think now, you know, we're very vocal when we feel strongly about something.
No!
Yeah.
No! Well, I feel like we always auditioned for the same friend roles.
Yes.
Yes.
I used to see you guys at auditions all the time when I used to subject myself to pilot season until I finally realized, you guys aren't happy. I'm not happy. Let's just not do this anymore because I'm just not a good auditioner. And that process, but I always, it was always fun to go and like see one of you and just sort of feel like, oh, you know, I don't feel like I'm just sitting here alone listening to the other person audition in the room.
That's the worst.
It is actually nice when you have
a door.
And it always sounds better than what you think you're going to do.
I know.
Yeah. No matter what. You're like,
that's a good way to go.
Disagree. I feel like a lot of the time it sounds, I hadn't heard a lot of really amazing auditions, and I always sort of felt like, oh, that's what they want, you know, then go in and then do actually worse, and then the other person then they get it.
Yeah. That happened to me where I was like me and some other guy up for this pilot, and like the guy was like going through his lines out loud in the waiting room.
Oh,
and big no no.
And he like, you know, it's like the line in it is like, you know, one of the lines is like, hey, let's like, we're both hot right now, let's go downstairs, cool off, eat some dinner, and come back up. And that was a line. And then, like,
did you do it that way?
Yeah, just like that.
You sort of threw it away, but it's nice.
But then this guy.
I mean, I worked really hard on that line. You just threw it away in my face.
Yeah, I mean, it's
good. That's what they want. They don't want
to
either.
No, you said it like, I don't care unless I want to get to the next one. But go ahead.
Yeah. But that's just like, those were the words. And then, like, there's a guy in there, kind of Spicoli looking guy. Kind of going like, hey, like saying him out loud, which I thought is like really weird to subject.
It's douchey.
Yeah, he's like, hey, let's just go downstairs, chill out, smoke a bowlage, and we'll go up here and figure it out. And I was like in my head going, asshole.
Yeah.
He got the fucking part.
He made a choice.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say you went in there and did that. Smoke a bowlage.
Yeah. Smoke a bowlage, that's what you want.
They're just taking your shirt off.
Yeah, and then outside he's going, it worked.
Yeah.
But that's probably, I would imagine, when you guys started being on the other side of the table and having people audition for you, are you extra nice? Like, yeah, but please, whatever you want to do.
Like, yes. Annoyingly so. Like, during that pilot, we were, like, laughing aggressively. Like,
at everything.
like, too much. You know, it's like, like, it's that TV laugh, like, on steroids.
And then they're like, wow, they really like their own show.
Good job. And it probably looked like we were like that. But we just felt, you know, because we've all been there.
Scared.
Where you're standing in front of people.
But you
nervous.
Learned so much watching a bunch of people audition.
Yes.
About, like, so many times you see people come in and you're like, oh,
like, oh, fuck it. They almost had it. Oh, they almost had it. Like, you want them to get it.
Yes, and there are a lot of times there are people that come in who were, like, fantastic, but just because you imagined in your head the guy being taller or, you know, having brown hair or, like, really stupid stuff, and you almost, like, want to run after them and be like, you were awesome. Like, you did such a good job. Like,
I got the part?
You're not going to get it.
Oh, why'd you come after me?
Well, just because you're tall. But, but, like, you wanted to, like, tell those people, like, you did a great job. It's just... it's a dumb thing.
Just run out and go. There's a surgery. You know? You cut your femur in half.
Yeah. If you could do that by the network test, then we consider.
Yeah.
But I think we did overcompensate because of the, like, just the horrors of going into auditioning. And my favorite was always the going in and the casting director, like, walking through the room. So it's like, all right, so we're going to do scenes just 1 and 3. And you're like, okay. And then you go in and you do the first scene. And they're like, all right. Thanks so much. Okay, because you said 3.
We got it. We saw what you needed.
Okay,
we got it.
Yeah. I've got 3.
You always see you can hear them. Everyone else doing both.
Uh-huh.
And you go in. You go. Thank you. Oh.
Okay. Because I. All right.
Oh, Nat. Yeah. Excuse me. Before you leave.
Are you?
Can we just get the sides back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Saving trees.
And you're so mad because you thought 3 is a really good scene.
I know.
No, that's where I got to do an accent.
Yeah,
and like,
stuff.
That's fine, guys. I can leave Santa Monica now.
Yeah, that's right.
4:30 p.m.
Just drove all the way there.
I know.
You're sort of
pouring with sweat.
Still.
I don't think, you know, because I'm sure that people are like, well, how hard is acting? To put anyone through pilot season, like just the emotional vice of pilot season and... it's, you know, you're getting, you know, like 4 auditions for the next day. They're all 13 pages long.
Yes.
They're all completely different on completely different sides of town with completely different, you know.
Yes.
And it's just the emotional, the daily emotional strain of rejection.
Yes.
It's just as fucking
it is
brutal. For me, it was always the hard part was the auditions, yes, but it was constantly having that conversation with every single person. You gone in for, you know, doctors? No. What's doctors? Oh, you should go in for doctors. Have you gone?
They love you.
Yeah, they love you. But everyone's mentioning all these things that you probably aren't right for, but then you get obsessed with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't gone in for doctors. I'm just listing employment for every example.
Fisherman's next. You haven't done fisherman.
Well, it's coming up.
Okay, good.
Depends on where we go.
They really haven't called you for Mountain Man?
No. No, they haven't. I invented them.
Their next big, huge movie is going to be a Mountain Man.
Mountain Man.
So then when did you, how long did you stay on the writing and producing side of television before you hopped over to film?
We developed probably 2 or 3 years after that. Never went to pilot stage with any of them, but, you know, wrote and developed more, at least pilot scripts. And then I want to say around 2005 or a little before that, we just said, you know, we had sort of a small idea for a movie, so let's just write a movie, something, you know, over the summer. And that turned into what is now The Way, Way Back, that journey started 8 years ago. So that was the first movie we wrote.
Wow.
What was the worst note that you ever got from a network?
For a TV pilot stuff?
Yeah.
There was one where... I remember one where it was during Adopted, we were shooting it, and it was a reshoot, and they were like, we still don't totally understand who this main character is. And one of the network people said, what if we had a mug with his name on it? Then you would know the guy's name and you would get who he was.
Oh,
I don't remember that. Oh my goodness.
My
favorite part is the explaining how it works.
Don't you remember that?
Vaguely, no.
They wanted a mug with the character's name Lloyd written across it, and like him to come in the morning being like, wake up, bud, and like take a sip from the coffee.
Wake up, it's me, Lloyd.
Like, you're a brother, which is why it's not creepy for me to walk in your room in the morning.
Their
idea.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Maybe I just blocked that out of my mind. I do remember we had written this, because it was over New Year's Eve, and we got a call about our notes.
Oh,
remember?
Yes.
And we had written this thing that we had all pitched, you know, it was clearly this ensemble about this sort of group of friends who didn't, it was almost like the anti-friends is how we pitched it. You know, it was almost like people who didn't get along because there was only one person that they all were sort of into type thing. And I remember the note, they were going, you know, we'd love this to be a romantic comedy. how can we make that happen? And it, it was the furthest from that, but they were like,
get a different show?
It's one of those things where they're everything shifts on a daily basis. They really want office set comedies, you know. So you go in there with that, they go, they won't manic comedies. Bail on the office thing. You know, they shift, the winds shift fast.
Yeah,
the minute you hear what they're looking for, the minute you get to the room.
And then you do the romantic comedy, and then you get, finally, it's like, guys, we're not going to move forward with this. You know, we're really needing office stuff. Right?
But you said!
Yeah.
You trust them. Because I feel like you'll get notes from like a TV executive, and what I think happens is, most of the time, they live an inch from a fire, mm-hmm. and they're constantly in fear of losing their job, and so they're just always like, they're basically chasing whatever's trending.
Yeah.
They're chasing the trend.
Yes.
So you might send them something, and they'll read it, and then just in an emotional moment, just give you notes, and then you go implement those because that is your job. And then afterwards, they go, hey, how come you did all those things? And you're like, well, because you said to do those things. And they almost don't even remember that they told you to do exactly what they didn't like.
And it's usually just, we just went the gist of that. I don't, we didn't actually want that. Yeah. You know, and you're like, oh, okay.
I'm sorry, I'm a marketing person, and I shouldn't be giving creative notes. So can't you just...
I just had a poster idea. That's my job.
There's a...
I love the title.
Mountain on it. Oh, I'm listening. Yeah.
Oh, we can do something with this. What's it called? The mountain.
The mountain. Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting up.
Is there a man in there?
I wish it was. It can be. Yes.
He's a man. Next day. No.
No, thank you.
It's not a mountain. It's a canyon. It's a canyon now.
You've lost your way with it. Bye.
Please don't kick me out of Hollywood.
We're looking more for fjord stuff. Just want more fjords.
Fjords are big. What's a fjord? So you started writing the sentence in 2005, and then
Way back was 2005.
I'm sorry, way back in 2005. So does that just that basically just sits on a hard drive for several years, and then at what point do you dust it off and decide that it's time to?
It
I just imagine you guys using your Oscars to like retrieve the file.
Bop 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 bop.
Print.
Yeah. It was a hard disk. It was like a Macintosh Plus disk that we pushed into there. I'm like, come on, little R2D2, spit it out and print it.
And when you gave it to a film company, you just used the Oscar as a USB drive. You're like, here's our new script. I think you like this.
We're just gonna talk about the Oscars a lot, if that's okay. I mean, I told you this when I saw you at Comic-Con for the community panel, but I mean, the one of the best moments of any Oscars was your leg maneuver.
Angelina Jolie.
That was a gorgeous moment.
It was a gorgeous moment.
Because it's so funny. Like everyone takes that show, everyone takes themselves so seriously on that show, and they try to look like they're not taking themselves seriously. And rarely is anything ever funny on the Oscars.
Right.
And you fucking destroyed the room with no words. No words. Just one minor. And
just my. Well, yes, it was a commit. At first, I tried, and then it felt like you hear. From my angle, it was like, you know, it's a smattering, you know, and then you realize you're in your head, you're like, you either need to go for it, or you need to pretend like nothing happened.
There's the groundlings training.
Yeah, and you're like, just go for it, because you've come this far, and then that was,
That was the true reward that night.
Yeah, it was just sort of like, all right, here we go. I don't know.
And then you said the press tried to, like, make such a big deal out of it, and like, Angelina Jolie is livid over this mockery.
Well, but once you left there, and, you know, because once you leave the stage, you go into and you do these sort of interviews and stuff. So you're very behind everyone else as far as going to parties and stuff. So you're sort of trying to catch up all night because you're sort of delayed. And people were like, oh, have you gone online? You know, like, of course we haven't gone online, but they were like, it's all over, you know, pictures and comparisons and, and you know, and yes, you would get some tweet now and then, like, how dare you? You know, like, why she would take it seriously, why anyone would take that seriously, you know, and so. So I think people love the idea that there was going to be this really big fallout.
You could have been the new Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
If only I could do some kind of haircut.
But it's sort of, Mountain Man don't need haircut.
Mountain Man don't need hair.
Mountain Man.
I'm back with your idea.
Mountain Man cut his hair with bear claw.
Yeah.
But that's why, you know, it was such a fun moment to me. And I think I either emailed you or sent you a direct message or something because one of my favorite things about just being around for a long time is watching people that you know and like just
evolve over time, and then seeing you guys up there and then seeing you be funny, it's sort of, it was like that, oh, everyone, I mean, people know you're funny, people who watch television know you're funny, but on that global audience, like, everyone now knows how funny these guys are, and that was it was really fucking cool. Yeah. It was really fucking cool.
It was,
because Alexander Payne seemed very serious.
It was a crazy, well, that whole night was crazy in general, because we knew we weren't going to speak, you know, and oh, if you really watch it back, and I have before, just because it's fun to just watch his face, just watch him, because he is, like, clearly, one, very annoyed by me, you know, which is because he was really wanted to get, say something to his mom. His thing was going to be about to, you know, that to his mom, and he had already told us, you know, because we had spoken first at Independent Spirit Awards, is it right? Writers Guild. And
you get Writers Guild.
Yeah, and he says, yes. If things go our way or we're up there, I would love to sort of take lead. Now, the Academy also tells you if you're multiple winners, they request that one person speak on your behalf. But no one, I think, has ever adhered to that, because we all see, you know, a cacophony of people just blah, 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 you know. So we went there and we're sort of obeying our rules. But I think he was just nervous at the time, was probably whittling down. And I, in retrospect, if we had gotten booted, if the music had played after that moment, I would have felt really lost. I would have felt like, oh my God, I can't believe it. But luckily he got it all in. So by the time we were off the stage, it was just like nothing had happened.
Yeah.
What was your feeling going into the show? Were you shitting your pants, or are you like, yeah, well, you know, great. If we win, bonus. If not, we're fucking at the Oscars.
I was definitely shitting my pants. I mean, I think it was
literally.
No, I did shit my pants.
Yeah, that's why he actually made a stance. He was trying to get.
That is the worst part about that whole thing, is that I saw Jim do that leg thing, and I was like, you fucking bastard. Like, you didn't tell me you were going to do that, you know? And I was like, that's fucking hilarious. Like, so I'm going to do it too. And so in my mind, we were doing the exact same thing. And I was like, yeah, we're both nailing this moment. Yeah. Yeah. What's up, world? And then I looked back on it, and it just looks like I'm awkwardly, like, just awkwardly admiring Jim's position with my legs kind of open. Like, I don't think I realized that how, like, pronounced Jim's leg was, and how mine was just sort of, like, open-faced, like, yeah. Oh, nice.
Me too, guys.
Yeah. Guys, we're both doing it. Yeah.
The old open-faced. Horrible image. Stand open face, please.
Yeah.
Okay. So your legs. Open face your legs.
Like an open face sandwich.
No, I.
Yeah.
I honestly, peel it back.
Peel it back.
Move. Spread the buns.
Gross. So you can go there. Yeah.
Gross. Dispose of salami, guys. Yes. Let it hang out.
Well, it depends on if it's
get the meat out there.
In the front or behind. Open face. Yeah.
Let's see the eggs.
That's a great. I want there to be a new, like, modeling session where that becomes something. Like, you know, it used to be just a little to your left, your chin. Now open face.
Open face.
Open face. Get the meat out. Push it out.
No, not literally.
No,
don't literally. No,
guys, just show
let
some family
feel
show.
That the meat is God, you know what, let's just take a five. Let's just take five, because if you're a model in this day and age and you don't understand to open face your junk, then there's no reason for you to be in this business.
This is the worst Disney Channel shoot ever.
Yeah.
This is the worst. Can you imagine? I always think the because you would when you're if you're funny at the at an award show like that, which you are, then it's like, oh, what are they gonna do this next time? And then do you feel any sort of, I mean, having years of improv training and having years of sketch training, I have always admired that, because I sort of feel like that kind of makes you bulletproof, because you can develop a character really fast. You know how to read an audience, how to get in, get out, and you're very comfortable on stage.
Mm-hmm. You mean with improv and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yes. I think that's been the best thing as far as my experience in L.A. is that training and feeling good about improv.
It gives you a
with anything.
It gives you a mutant power that most people don't have, because you always have that to fall back on in a room.
Well, I think it's you know, it's weird that, because the truth is, you know, and that's the reason I think with, you know, teaching classes there or anywhere of improv, it's like, it's not just actors and stuff, but you have all these types of people who love to do it now, and it really is a way of making people more comfortable just with listening, whether whatever job they do, you know, it really is like a great tool outside of, you know, being a performer and stuff, that it just makes you more comfortable in social situations.
So how do you guys,
he said,
wow. How do you guys break down the, because I'm obviously, I think, you know, like I said, stand-up was my biggest enemy when it came to doing improv with a group. But how do you get someone to break down that wall when they are constantly thinking about what they're doing or constantly second-guessing, or it's that moment where they're like, what if I get on stage and I can't think of anything?
Yeah. Well, that's our natural instinct, because I think people, you know, when you're watching people improvise, you can, you know, most often, if they're in the beginning stage, you can often see and call them out when you're thinking. I can tell you're thinking,
yeah.
You know, one, because you probably just missed something that someone said, you know, and the idea that people have a hard time giving up power, because while you're trying to give up power, you're trying to make yourself A, look good, B, try to understand what's going on and not look like a fool, you know, and I think that people have a hard time letting control, you know, releasing that control. So often with beginning basics, you know, people are just trying to figure out how to be funny, and your job is to say, just stop. I'm not here to teach you how to be funny. I'm just here to teach you how to improvise, and that's actually a different thing. Because I think just if you play it truthfully, those things will just sort of happen. That's hard for people to do because they feel like I have to get that laugh or whatever. But
they think comedy comes from some other place, and it's like, yes. Rather than just, it's very hard to trust yourself when you know.
Yeah, and it's hard to get out of your head, obviously. So I think all of us have that problem.
I think people think of comedy as like telling a joke. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to make a joke.
Yes,
and which is the worst thing that you can do.
And there are some people that are very witty and can just stand there and stand in one place and say hilarious things, you know, but there are a lot of us like me who cannot do that, you know, and so you really do have to adhere to sort of the, I don't know, tenets of, you know, and the principles of improv in terms of listening and not trying to be funny and just sort of, you know, doing your thing.
I had Mike McDonald for a few classes, and he's actually been on the podcast before, and I reminded him, like, you used to yell at me.
Mm. Yeah.
That's a joke! Mm-hmm. You're doing a joke! Mm-hmm. Stop it!
Yeah.
Like, which just always just made me like,
I know.
The side coaching, as you would do in those classes, like that, where you're yelling out and basically saying, where are you? Who are you?
I did that.
Label.
You're making my open face, close face.
Yeah, open, close the face. This is improv. All right, it's too dirty. Don't go blue, close face.
I tried to, I was learning how to teach at the Groundlings, and it was my first time doing that side coaching bit. And these two girls got up and did a scene, and they're literally the first time I was like, Mom, thanks for taking me to this like wedding dress shop, you know, like, and you know, trying on gowns with me. And I was like, guys, where are you? And they literally, like, everybody stopped and was like, I guess we're at the wedding gown shop near the racks.
And I'm her daughter.
Get specific. And I just started sweating. Like, and they were like, I guess we're near the back. You know, like near the restroom. And they, better.
Yeah. And they had paid for this class.
Yeah. It was so mortifying.
And now you have to commit to that because you don't want
to. No, because you have to be the teacher. You have to be an authority. Yeah. I know, but get more specific. Because you always get called out.
Come on, what are your coordinates?
Yeah, your coordinates.
But I did that.
Northeast, northwest. I don't know.
What's the declension? I don't know where you are. What are the degrees?
When I did what's the test class you take to see which level you come in at?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was real nervous. Like, I'd moved out here specifically. I was like, I'm going to move to LA. I'm going to go to the Groundlings. I'm going to meet people that are just like me. Like, I'm going to talk about all the same kind of comedy and music and stuff like that. And I get there and I'm really excited and nervous. And then I like talking to a guy next to me going, like, hey, can you believe it? Groundlings. The guy's like, my agent told me I should take these classes. I was like, hey, it's pretty crazy, huh? Pictures of Pat Morita on the wall. He's like, I don't know. My agent told me I should take these classes. Yeah, I was like, do you guys like comedy? And then, like, I was just kind of out of it. I was like, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. And then I was on stage trying to do, a thing, and the teacher was like, he's like, all right, stop, you're trying to be funny, and guess what, you're not funny. And then I just fucking crumbled, and then just mumbled throughout the rest of the scene and sat down. And they were like, call back in a couple days to see which entry level you're at. And I just never went back.
Oh,
wow.
That's brutal. Destroyed. Yeah, that, and I didn't even try and do
who
comedy
was
again
it?
For
let's
another
call
year.
Them out.
Wow. And that's why I'm here, right? That's, let me just tell you why I said it. Here's why I said it. You just really rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, sure.
And this is coming from a guy who has three characters. Three distinct characters. Yeah.
So that was 19.
I know what I'm talking about.
There's Mountain Man.
There's Mountain Man. Yeah. There is Choir Boy. And there is Mechanic.
I know your characters. That's why I came to the Groundlings.
Okay, let's do this
and
afterwards.
You had just had a bad taco that
And I
day.
Just had a bad taco.
So you needed to crush someone.
Yeah, that's for shame, whoever.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I could remember who it was.
Yeah,
not
so
for any
right
real
here.
You know, revenge reasons.
No, we could really lay.
Well, I would imagine, though, as an instructor, there's that extra thing where you do have to be patient. But if you're a good improviser and you know exactly what you want to see, I guess I see, it's awful because you're hitting someone in literally the most vulnerable moment emotionally in that sense. But, you know, it's just like, come on, you're almost there. Just fucking do it. Yeah. Just get it. You're so close. You know, like I can.
Yeah.
Some people.
That's very different from going, you're trying to be funny. You're not funny.
You're not funny.
Yeah. I was 19. I was out here for like 2 weeks. I was still scared of everything.
Yeah.
Like everything frightened me. And like for that to happen, I was like, well, I guess I was wrong about the only thing I've ever wanted to do.
Yeah.
What'd you do? Did you just move back to Hawaii and give up comedy?
No, I went to San Pedro and started doing drugs.
Smart.
Yeah.
Super smart.
Two roads in the woods diverge. Yeah.
I need a warm place I can do drugs.
Yeah.
You pick the path littered with pills.
Yeah. Littered with
and
pills.
Drugs.
You, Hansel and Gretel.
Is that how you took drugs? Did you take pill drugs?
Is that how you took
pill drugs?
Pill drugs. Whatever they had, really.
Oh, man. What are you going to do? Pill drugs.
Yeah,
you guys going to do pill drugs?
So stoned on all these pill drugs.
You guys did Quaaludes.
Man.
A lot of barbiturates at this party. Yeah. I was used to be warned in grade school about barbiturates
and
Quaaludes.
And that's all we heard about.
You want some lewds?
Yeah.
Nobody ever
I've
wants.
Never even
but
seen
they're
a lewd.
Because they're gone. They don't exist anymore.
No, they are.
Isn't that correct? Like, they don't exist.
It's like a Studio 54 drug, right?
Yeah, no one makes Quaaludes anymore.
I don't know. It's a cruel word.
Let's get some
math
moves.
Is so done
for ironic purposes.
Retro.
That's how Heisenberg ends everything.
Yes.
He starts making Quaaludes.
Quaaludes, bring
them back.
Then he
goes out of business.
Said, like in the news, they're talking about like MDMA. They're talking about ecstasy as like a new drug. They're like a new crazy drug, and all it is just like powdered ecstasy. But they're talking about how it's like the new scourge drug hitting the kids.
I wouldn't.
Different.
I mean, come on, ecstasy is great.
Yeah, they're like, kids are dying off this stuff. I'm like, they always have.
Yeah.
It's a 20-year-old fucking fad.
But now they're just listening to Skrillex while they die.
Yeah, exactly. Listening to Skrillex is like dying.
So what?
And going to heaven.
Bam!
Is that a backwards high five?
Well, he wasn't in the right position.
I will never leave somebody hanging with a high five, but if I don't respect the joke, I give it the back of my hand.
Smart.
Oh, that's
smart.
Actually worse.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's more effort for doing something shittier.
You know what? That teacher is right, Jonah. You're still not funny.
Damn. Did you reverse high five the teacher before you went on stage? Because that might have rubbed him
probably
in the wrong way.
Yeah. I told you I don't like high fives.
Also weird.
I said, welcome to the Groundlings class. Do not high five me. And you did exactly
in either direction. I don't want a fronty or a backy.
Especially backhanded.
I don't want any of it.
A really weird traumatic event from my life I cannot tell you about.
That Groundlings Theater's been there so long, it's like that used to be like not a good neighborhood.
No.
Like a really bad there's like the Tommy Tang's next door.
Tommy Tang's was next door for a long time.
There was McDonald's there
for a long time. It was 19. I think they got that building in like 71. I think.
Holy shit!
It's been around for obviously 35 plus years or whatever.
Yeah.
It was when you first got. I mean, it's still not. You know,
it's not the
still
greatest.
Walk back to your cars together. It's not like wow. What a relief.
It's the deceptive nature of Los Angeles. You're like, this neighborhood looks okay. The guy's got a gun.
Well, a lot of bars open, you know, like across the street and down the street, Village Idiot and stuff. So there's stuff there, but still.
You got to pass that 7-Eleven.
Really weird.
That is trouble.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the 7-Eleven.
It's dicey.
So how do you, just sort of balancing the, now that you're writing really good movies, Do you, is it weird to go act in things? Does it sort of feel weird to like, oh, this is someone else's material and I'm just a hired person to go say lines?
No, it's actually kind of refreshing at times because you don't have any of the responsibilities that you might otherwise have if you were writing or directing it. You know, as an actor, you can literally just be like, yeah, I'm going to do my scene and then I'm going to be heading out of here. See you guys. Good luck with all those problems. You
know, like, have fun getting notes.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, have my fun calls staying at here. 1.
Yeah. I got to be up by 1 p.m.
Yeah, there's something very, I don't know, refreshing and liberating about just acting in something. I mean,
that's
certainly
also where we started, so it's like you don't no one will lose all that stuff. And we started both as actors, and then just because of the training and writing a lot, that sort of folded into that. So I think it's always been a pursuit to do all these things, and then the directing sort of obviously just happened, so that's still fresh.
How's that? It was great. I mean, it was very stressful. It was a ton of
because you have
anxiety.
To know you have to answer everything
yes,
always.
Everything always. Yeah. And as a result, like you know, it is very rewarding to go through that process and come out on the other end and have this thing that you know you shepherded along the entire way and did make those decisions and did it the way you wanted to do it. And there is something very gratifying about that you may miss out if you were just as an actor, you know, doing something and then going home and having a 1 o'clock call. But but I think we, you know, it was challenging because we were with, you know, working within a smaller budget. We had a really small time frame to shoot the movie. You know, we had one camera. So there were a lot of things that made it more challenging. But ultimately, like, it is sort of dream come true to be able to direct your own material and, you know, have the cast that we had. And it was very cool, I think. You know, it just stressed with Jim lost a lot of weight during the movie.
Yeah. A lot of people ask that, too. When they saw
you actually movie. Do
oh,
ask that.
Oh, it's so great that you lost weight for that role. And I was like, oh, no.
That was
just my body being
what
eaten,
happens
eaten
when
alive.
From
by,
the inside.
By
yeah.
Pain
by stress.
And stress.
Yeah.
I went the other way, and I just gained weight because I was so freaked out.
Well, they brought those plates to both of you, and he didn't touch his. And you're like, well, I can't
you
waste
that?
I can't waste
that?
It.
Budget's so tight as it
you
is.
Let go to waste.
You gonna eat that individually wrapped donut over there?
You can eat that plastic. I just eat the plastic.
Yeah, just lick it. Lick it.
It feels good. It just like coats the stress.
It makes me feel better.
But yeah. I do like that you've essentially this evolution of, you know, I mean to take a Groundlings class and to that is as a performer seizing control of your career in a way because you are becoming a writer performer. You're entering a structure. You're trying to learn your craft better. You know, the actors that just sort of audition and just kind of wait for the success bus to hit them is just sort of feels like, oh, how could anyone just wait around? I don't know how the fuck, you know.
Yeah.
I have to have a stand-up. I need something to have something. Yeah. And you did that and you did Groundlings and you started writing and then now you're directing. It's like you do seem to be gravitating towards more and more control of your destiny.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah. I think you have to, this, you know, and even before when we first got there, now you have even, like I said, outside of other theaters, outside of being able to shoot things for the internet and stuff, it's there's nothing better than just being proactive and creating stuff on your own, whether in any capacity, whether you're doing shows up, you know, on stage shows or filming stuff, writing constantly. And I think that, you know, the more time you spend actually being those people sitting next to you in that audition who said, oh, my agent sent me here. I mean, that tells me most likely that they're not here to learn about improv or be really educated. Yeah. They're probably thinking about the end game of Saturday Night Live.
Right.
You know, and you get it, not just there, but I think a lot of people who go in here, a lot of make the mistake when they get to let's just say Los Angeles or New York, wherever they're doing this, that the visual of their end game is how fast can I get it? Because people will ask that question. How do I get on Saturday Night Live? I have no idea how you get on Saturday Night Live. I can teach you how to improvise, you know, and then, you know, start your, you know, that part of your journey.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people want it now.
And and Groundlings takes a long time to get through.
Any of these, but all this, to find that exposure, to be in that right moment when someone might be in the audience, whether it's there, IO, or Second City, or UCB, whatever, it's a lot of times people put in their head of like, this is what you have to do to get this.
Right.
Go take this class.
Oh, yeah, someone
did. That's just because someone did it. That's just happened. But you look at Melissa McCarthy, she came in with us, you know, her journey was this long journey. She was like an assistant for a long time too. When you guys were,
she
show.
Was Jenny's assistant.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
she was her
yes.
cousin. She's Jenny McCarthy's cousin. She was right. Jenny's yeah. assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was working with Jenny, and then Jenny got a sketch show, mm-hmm. and Melissa was her assistant, and I would hang out with Melissa and be like, God damn it, you're so fucking funny. Why are mm-hmm. you not? And mm-hmm. then she was just like, oh, well, yeah, living the dream.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then of course, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like that. For everyone else, is like, where'd she come from? But we had been working with her for same number of years.
I used to think the Groundlings track was punishingly long. Like, wow, 5 or 6 years before you might even get to the. But then when I think about it, I go, well, but it took me 6 or 8 years before I started to feel comfortable as a stand-up. I mean, it's not really...
Right.
It's just sort of comparable. Right. Just about how long it takes to kind of find... Yeah. In most cases, not always, but that's about how long it usually takes to sort of figure out who you are on stage.
It completely. Does in that way. But Groundlings is also... It's one place. And it's also by design that it's slow. It takes a while. And that's only because we only have 30 company members at any one time. You know, we don't have touring companies.
There's only one Saturday a week.
There's only one Saturday a week. And so as you take more and more classes, yes, it slows down because the wall's not changing as fast, you know, and as opposed to places that have touring companies and all this stuff. But the Groundlings is a place where we just own our own material. We're just writing stuff, putting it up there, and then it's our possession, so then we can take and do something else with it. So in the meantime, when I was there, I would take class, you know, a scene study class, or, you know, try to do as many other things as I could do, you know, while I was waiting, so I wasn't just putting all the eggs in that sort of
And when
of
you're that nebbish, you have to do it.
No.
You have to create your own opportunity.
Well,
I mean, you're probably counting all those eggs all the time because you're so nebbish.
I'm very nebbish, but here's how I got nebbish. Nebbish was a 5-year journey for me as well. It was about me going on a journey through my mind and soul. Part of it was like crossing Jordan, you know?
Right.
Literally, I had to get as nebbish as possible.
He didn't even come up with the mechanic till the 5th year.
Yeah. What's the Nebbish Mountain Man? The Nebbish Mountain Man.
Oh, I don't know if I can go up this. You know, he's always questioning himself. But it is fun to look at, like, you know, it's like you get one little, like a little guest spot or some co-star or under 5, and then all people see you as is that one little thing.
Right.
So believe me, I look at the chapters of, like, I was persnickety assistant, you know.
Right.
Nebbish, you know, nerd, you know, sexual deviant, you know, angry guy. You know, you go
That's
through
all
little,
the dean, I think.
These pretty much. No, they've all worked into one dean character Pelton. Now. Yeah. I finally made him into one. Yes. Ha ha. But it does always feel like that. They go, like, get that guy, you know.
So. I can imagine. I mean, obviously it worked out well for you, but was there any point where you're like, God damn, I wish there was a fucking YouTube when we were doing Groundlings and you could mm-hmm. just make stuff.
Yeah, like, I know.
It is.
In those days, you really could just, like, well, I can perform as long as people buy tickets on a Saturday night.
Yes, it really
exactly.
Was.
It was calling, like, getting that, like, casting director book at, like, Samuel French and, like, calling, like, all those random people and, like, being like, I'm doing a show at the upstairs at the complex.
You sound nebbishy. Is this Jim Rash?
Don't you take my character. I remember when we first started, you know, you finished a Groundlings level and it became a trend to then take that show, that's the sketch show. So you'll be on the third, the fourth level, and your advanced class made this, you know, show that went really well because, I mean, the audience was your friends and your family. Of course it felt like it was a rock concert.
Right.
So then you're like, we should take it on tour. You know, tour being like rent out of space. And so I remember we rented out the Stella Adler Theater up on Hollywood. I don't know if it's still there. And for some reason we thought, you know what, how long should we have a run? Let's do 8 weeks. Like, why would you do 8 weeks? Twice a week. So Mondays and Tuesdays, hot nights. This is before any, I mean, again, Groundlings is probably the only thing here in Acme. You know. So we rent out this thing, and you quickly realize why that rock concert doesn't translate, because these people aren't your friends and family. Oh. So the first night's okay because you've invited everyone you can possibly think of, mm-hmm. and then it starts getting smaller where we were performing nothing, we're cutting back, we shouldn't do so many shows. And I remember being in the back of the area where I made an entrance from the back of the theater, that's how they exit, and I was waiting with this ridiculous costume on, and out walks, you know, a good portion of audience, like, this is mid-show.
Oh.
And you do that mid-thing, you're going with me, you're coming.
Thanks.
Thank you
were coming. Hey, guy! You know, then you make your entrance.
A lot of other places to go tonight, I see.
But that was what it was. You had to, like, try
and,
to get people
and
to
LA's
come
not
it.
A theater culture.
Oh, no, God, no, no, not at all.
So you can't just get no. foot, and you don't get foot traffic.
No.
No.
People have to go to your thing
well,
on
Mars. Hollywood Boulevard, yes. You get some really great walk-ins.
What is happening here?
What is this?
We had the same thing, I remember, with Melissa and Dax and
Dax Shepard. Oh, yeah, Dax Shepard was
yeah. Ben Falcone. We had the same show. We decided to do, like, two. Like, one at 6 and one at 8, you know? And, like, all our friends were coming to 8, you know?
Yeah.
6 p.m.
We looked out at the 6 p.m. and there was just two people. Yeah. And we were like, do you do the show? Like,
you gotta
do
it.
Literally went out and we're like, I'm sorry, we've canceled the 6 p.m. show.
What? You gotta do it.
Can you cast outnumbers the audience? You have to, the show must not
go on. No, you gotta do it.
Did you tell
no,
back?
We had to tell. We were like, we had to cancel it for unforeseen circumstances. So could you come back at
8? Wait, I love that you said unforeseen, as if their brains couldn't put it together that they only.
It's technically accurate. It's technically accurate.
Oh my God,
though.
Did someone get hurt?
But it's
no.
technically
we
accurate.
We did not know
they
that only
know?
Two people yeah. were gonna show
no,
up.
No, only unforeseen.
Oh, you guys must not have gotten the call where we canceled the show.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was so horrible. And these people are like, oh, yeah, no, okay. And then it's like that horrible thing.
We will not be coming back.
Oh,
and then you try to be positive. Well, now we can have dinner. Yeah. And then we can come back and do the
interview. Rehearse. Let's do another run through.
Car ride home. Oh, honey, I really wanted to see that show. Well, it was unforeseen circumstances.
Wait, if we're going to do another run through, why didn't we just do it for the two people who were here?
I know you wanted to rehearse. It felt like no big deal to, like, just do it one extra time.
Oh, so.
That's how our brains work.
And then
you
still would get mad. I remember doing stand up shows where there were literally, like, two people in the audience, but I would do them anyway, and then you'd get off stage and then be like, this fucking this crowd sucked, and you're like, what are you, there were two people, like, what are you expecting out of a couple of people?
Yeah. Yes. They yes. probably enjoyed it, but they're not gonna vote, you know, it's like
no, there are some.
No one sits by themselves going, ha, 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 ha. Then you just hit the
unless
crazy.
You guys are in a casting meeting.
Yes.
Yeah, well, unless you're auditioning you're for us. But that makes sense.
It must be nice.
I want you to like me.
It must be nice, though, just sort of feeling a bit of, you know, I mean, obviously it's a whole other set of insecurities, I'm sure, that come along with this side of the business that you're tackling. But to go to work on a sitcom or to go to work on, like, Community, now it must be like, well, you know, if Community, you know, like, whatever happens with the show, you might be sad, but you don't feel like, what am I going to do? You know,
yes.
I mean, like,
yeah.
What's that Joel McHale going to do? He's fucking only he's only tall and handsome and charming and funny. Like, what do you do with that?
Nowhere.
Mm-hmm. He's gone, seriously. Yeah. He's not directing anything.
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ.
In his face.
In his face,
in his handsome face.
He's just directing his pectoral muscles.
Yeah.
Like money into his bank account.
Yeah, exactly. Buying another pool.
How's Community going now? You guys
over
are
here,
just
guys.
Back for a couple weeks.
Yeah, we're 2 weeks in. And
does it feel good with Dan back?
Oh, it's great. I mean, from the first table read, you just knew, oh, okay. That's what was missing, you know, because Dan is so specific and such a creative, a voice that you can't replicate. You can attempt, you know, you can do your version of, but I think it would be an offensive version, you know, just because it's a little bit more complex than you think it is, you know, and not until you read it again or hear it again do you realize, oh, that's what it is,
yeah.
You know. And not just him. I mean, Chris McKenna is obviously back as well, and those two sort of working hand in hand along with a lot of new writers. And so it's been great.
Yeah.
You know, it's just fun, and it's always been cool. A fun job.
My favorite thing at the Comic-Con panel was Dino Stamatopoulos getting the audience. Did Dan know he was going to do that?
I don't know.
You never know with
did.
Dino. I can never tell what's planned and
what he just does. If he did, I never asked him. But
Dino got up
out of nowhere.
Dino got up, and the first thing he says, he goes, "Hey Dan, so unfuck Sony, I guess." And Dan is just like, he's kind of had his head down. Like, you know, as I said, there's two Dan modes. That's there's really like fine. There's yes. kind of like, yeah, I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks, and there's like, I'm really sorry. I'm just trying to behave.
Back and forth, clenching his fists.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And he was very much in behave Dan mode and very apologetic. And so it was just, it was a good moment.
It was a good moment.
It was a really good moment.
And then Dino was just promoting.
Oh, he was promoting his panel.
His panel. Oh, yeah. Yes. His.
And then he got the room wrong, so he texted Dan, and then Dan had to tell everyone what the correct panel
was. He said he'd be over there. Yes. Yeah.
During the community panel.
Yeah, during the open questions. With this long line of people waiting, including one, like, human being
Like, I mean, as in someone dressed up as a human being.
Right. Mm-hmm. How was the so just the transition between the TV shows and Descendants? What was the Descendants process like for you?
And it coming about, or just in the writing part of it?
Well, coming about, and then the writing part of it, and then because I would imagine that was
that it came via the way back. In other words, we had written the way back, and that went through this whole thing. It's going to be made. It's not going to be made. It's going to be made. That was that 8-year journey. But within that 8-year journey of getting actually to make it, that script got around town, and that got us in the door to meet Alexander Payne and Jim Burke's producing partner, and Jim Taylor. And they had optioned the book, The Descendants, and were looking to hire some writers. And they had read the way back, and, you know, I think the balance of comedy and drama was something that sort of connected with them, that also connected to what the idea behind Descendants was. And so we, and I'm sure they met with many writers, we went in there and sort of read the book and fell in love with it, and then went in and sort of just talked out loud about the approach to it. And that's how that came to be. And then we spent about... two and a half years, probably, from beginning to end.
Oh, my God.
As far as, like, you know, from draft to draft to there was a moment where Stephen Frears was going to direct it.
Yeah.
And we went to New York and sort of met with him for a day and sort of talked about things he'd like to do with another pass. And then he ended up not doing it, and then Alexander decided to do it. So,
was there any point where you're like, this is probably never going to happen. This is just going to be a bunch of meetings.
I guess, it was a long time. I guess we didn't really, you know, we knew that way back was taking forever, so I guess it's nothing new that this would be this ongoing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think then, I mean, certainly it was exciting that Stephen Frears was going to do it, but he never fully committed to doing it, so there was always there was always the chance that he wouldn't, and then he didn't, and then Alexander came on, and then things started becoming very real, because it was like, oh, wow, Alexander's going to direct this, you know. Oh, they got that guy George Clooney. Oh, this should be good. I'd watch this.
Yeah.
And then it, you know, just sort of like took off and went really fast after that happened.
Did you guys go to Hawaii at all during the writing process?
During the writing process, we did, right after we had finished the sort of the first draft.
We went out there.
And then we went back the next year when they were, I guess it was 2 years later.
Yeah, it was later. And then when they were shooting, we went back, you know, 5 days to visit. But at that point, you know, our job was completed and it was in.
Did you write in, like, some of the pigeon English that was in there into the script? Or was that, there was someone on set to kind of help?
Well, there's some pigeon from the stuff that you could pull from the book, but then what I think a lot of the big stuff came with Alexander's sort of research once he got up there in pre-production, and he with Cowie sort of went all over the islands and really learned more, even more from her as far as the land, especially with the land deal stuff, especially with the complexity of that. And then, you know, it's also
I was going to say he also cast a lot of local people.
Yeah.
And I think that obviously, you know, that local flavor made it, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was born and raised on Oahu, and just even, like, when I went to see the Descent, just the opening shots of just mainly, like, the kind of Chinatown, Ala Park area near downtown, like, I was like, wow, they're showing Hawaii.
Yeah.
Like, this is, like, yeah, that's the kind of Hawaii I grew up with. Like,
yeah.
Kind of dirty.
I thought Hawaii was just a bank of hotels on a shore.
Yeah, well, next to a mountain that looks like a mountain.
Mm-hmm. Where there's a man.
Ah, mountains.
Never there.
My character's right at home. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. All right. I get you. I can't go to Saturn, apparently. But my character can go to Hawaii.
But can he high five?
But what if his rental Jeep breaks down?
That's a Nebbish mechanic.
We're brothers.
Different character. I'm sorry. I have
no, they're brothers.
Can the Nebbish character mention that he's Nebbish?
Yeah.
Because no, I don't think we're going to get that.
I don't know. It's always
good. Can you have a mug that says Nebbish? Yes.
Taking a sip. You seem Nebbish.
What makes you say that?
Okay, and in the mug, it's not coffee, but it's a bunch of car wrenches.
Yes.
And that's how you know that he's a mechanic.
Poink, 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 poink. Oh, I picked up the wrench mug.
Again.
Who has my coffee? And it cuts to the mechanic.
I can't fix it. It's full of coffee.
It really writes itself.
I mean, it did. It just did.
Yeah.
I think it wrongs itself more than anything else.
Yeah, no. It fell apart.
Hey, did you feel more... I mean, it's kind of funny to that transition of being... an artist where you're just making stuff and it's kind of for yourself and there's not really a lot on the line. And so you'll take all these risks. You don't give a shit. And then at a certain point, people start getting more interested and then you do something and then it makes money and then now they're really interested and now they're looking at you. And do you feel responsibility? Do you feel responsibility around the Descendants? And or were you used to it because it took so long? Or did you feel that with Way, Way Back too?
No, I don't know. I don't feel it. I think we have somehow avoided feeling, you know, like we have to live up to a certain standard or there are certain expectations. I think it's really just about doing the work and being happy with it, you know, and feeling like you did a good job.
I think the only thing that gets really that you always feel this, I think everyone wants you to be the fastest writer in the world. You know, they want you to be, when can we have it, you know?
So we can sit on it for 2 months.
Yes, and it always is. The pressure about, especially when you're taking a job, like in other words, like that's not just spec, it's loose, let's work a little bit today, tomorrow, you know, but when someone said, we're hiring you to do this, and we need to see it by here, I think that's where the pressure starts to mount, at least for me, you know. It's like, I think we've been told, why aren't you guys faster writers, you know, by... representation. And I'm like, well, I guess I just don't want to turn in something that I'm embarrassed by. You know, I want to turn in something that we can...
No, when someone says that, what you do is you take a selfie dick pic with your Oscar next to your dick, and then you text it to them and go...
Or just really? Full on open face.
Is the Oscar for scale?
Yeah. Oh, don't worry about it. Yeah. But no, I think that's the pressure you feel. I think sometimes afterwards it's like they're like, okay, that was great. What else you got and how fast can you get that done?
How did you take the Oscar win in the sense of you feel pretty good about it, or is there any part of you that's almost a little embarrassed? Like, if like friends come over, you're like, "Oh, that's not. I mean, it's silly. It's I don't know." Or are you sort of like, "Yeah, I fucking I own."
Now you make people kiss it.
I do. Yeah, as soon as they come into my house with their like a full friend.
It used to be take your shoes off, but he doesn't care about that. No. He says, "Go over to that statue and give it a nice
which
wet,
statue
yeah. open
yeah yeah which mouth. One oh my Oscar
where's
yeah."
Oh. Yeah, in your face, Joel McHale.
Oh my God, Joel must be like, Joel just always has like a tenting boner. I'm like, how'd you get that? That's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there someplace I can sit down?
I guess they missed the big year.
We all did.
No. Oh, wow.
Oh, really? Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
Too far.
America did
we
that.
Were, I didn't we were do that. Playful America making did fun that. Of Joel. We were playful making fun of Joel.
Listen, I'm not America.
No?
I didn't decide that no one was going to see that.
All right, but, you know, I don't know if we have to bring that up.
Well, whatever.
He doesn't listen to the show. Happened. It's fine. It's totally fine.
He doesn't know how to work podcasts.
Well, okay, he doesn't made it
it's
work.
It's not a football game.
Yeah. Okay, all right, okay.
I'm glad, we're really laying into him in a good way. This is good for him.
The best way to cover up an insult is with another insult. We all agree that creating a pile of, a totem pole of insults.
He would give as much as he gets.
He would give.
Guys, he'll never see this. We're not a Kardashian or a reality program.
Okay, boom. All right, again.
Boom. Can we have like a whole set here? We got a good, strong five, guys.
Matt's anti-Joel McHale set.
Yeah.
It's so sweeping
prepping
the
for hashtag McHale roast.
Oh, you know, now that the Franco roast did well, they're probably going to be dipping into the younger generation.
Well, dipping into those roasts, yeah.
Yeah. They would. I think they could probably roast Joel. I'm actually surprised he's never done a roast.
Yeah.
Yeah, he seems like he'd be great for roasting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, being a roaster, I don't know, roaster.
Roasteteer.
Roasteteer, yeah. Thank you. I knew it was something complex.
On the day.
I knew it was something needlessly awkward.
Roasteteer. Yeah, yeah. We gotta book some more roasteteers. Okay.
Roastonauts.
Hey, roast.
These Roastofarians.
Oh, that's the end of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, by the way,
thanks for taking the heat off that Skrillex joke. Yeah.
So the I sadly I haven't seen The Way Way Back yet because it was in theaters.
We're
and I never had, no, please come back.
Let's go.
No, come back.
Let's go.
Where are you going?
Yeah.
Why am I in this rickety house? Oh, that you can park right outside the studio. He's just doing circles around the studio. There's no dopplering.
These mics are picking up everything.
He's going to the mountain.
At the beach.
He's going to the mountain. There's a carnival at the mountain. It's a circus.
Sorry, guys.
It's a mountain circus.
I got really upset and I took a little journey and I'm back.
What
did you find?
Yeah,
I've been better.
That's all a great carnival act.
We all took the journey with you.
With there was a clearing in the
but,
woods.
But yeah, because I never have time to go to. I never have time to go to a movie anymore. I watch everything. I have to watch everything on my. So can I have a? Can I? I'll pay. I'll give you the money that I was going to spend at the theater if you send me a link or a DVD.
Kind of, I don't think it works like that. You know, directly pay them.
But wouldn't you should? I mean, in today's Kickstarter world.
Yeah.
Sort of how it should work.
Yeah, it really should be, you know.
Yeah. I've had people try to give me money before. They're like, I just got your CD off, you know, I torrented it off something, so here's $10. And I'm like, well, you don't have to give me money for it. Wow. I don't give a shit.
Very honorable.
Yeah, take that money.
Yeah.
Why not?
Because I don't want it.
Honor code.
Then he's going to give a dollar to Alex. Yeah. Then he's
it's dirty when it's like that, huh? They palm you a $5.
They just leave it on a next to the door.
Yeah, they just crumple it up.
Here you go. Your here's your fucking money. Yeah. Piece of shit.
Great job.
I laughed like 6 times.
Oh, Bruce.
Oh, Bruce Gutter.
That was, yeah, it wasn't deep.
Jonah started accidentally doing a new character called Bruce Gutter, but he hates it when we call it out. Hey, Bruce Gutter.
You should embrace it.
No,
come on.
I am.
Bruce.
I mean, you.
Yes.
You have a name for your character. That's huge.
Yeah. You gave it the name.
No, I think
it was Kurt Brownoller named
Kurt Brownoller?
Kurt Brownoller named him Bruce Gutter.
That's.
I do it in the car still. Yeah. Every time I was like, you know, oh no, I can't even do it now.
Do the thing that everyone's waiting to hear.
Hey, oh Bruce, where's the cocaine?
In the back.
He's a little bit angry.
Yes. In the like I said.
It's like he's a guy who's never almost. He's
Bruce,
almost
did you touch this stuff? Bruce, it looks like you touched it.
I got bored.
Wait, so you literally just touched it? You didn't use any of it?
You leave me here watching all this shit. Why can't I go on the runs with the other boys?
Because, Bruce, your job is to watch it. Watch the shit. You don't do the runs.
The cocaine's in the back.
Bruce got her.
Bruce, how's your mother?
You're supposed to ask him about his mother.
I'd rather not talk. I can't do it.
No, Bruce.
It hurts my throat sometimes to do
your heart to talk about your mother.
Yeah. Good characters hurt, man.
Like Mountain Man?
Mm-hmm. He hurts bad. Oh, my God.
I thought he was Nebuchadnezzar.
No, that's his. Yeah, there's
mechanical.
A couple.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mountain Man.
Oh, okay. I thought
there's Nebuchadnezzar.
Well, you take the San Diego freeway to the Slauson and cut off.
You cut off your Slauson.
They're all blending.
Get back in your car. everything that and I apologize that I hadn't seen the movie before you came in, but I wouldn't want to talk too much about what goes on in the movie because then people get very angry about spoilers. But what I read a lot about it, and I think I even tweeted at you like, holy shit! Cause the reviews that I saw were like, this is the one of the funniest, most charming movies of the summer.
It luckily we had some really good response, to the movie. I don't know what else to say to that. I'm just yesing. Yes.
You're yes-anding that?
Yes-anding.
Does it feel weird to talk about, like, people saying good things about the...
No, because, I mean, the good thing is you read all of them.
Do you read them?
Well, I don't read them, but they send you, like, a list of all the things, and then they'll just have positive, mixed positive.
Really?
Mixed, you can just do a quick one sheet of, like,
They give you a spreadsheet of, like a tone review?
Yeah.
Yes.
3 out of 5. 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5.
Negative.
Hated it.
Mixed.
So someone's job is to be Rotten Tomatoes for you guys?
Kind of.
Like they pull it all together. Yeah. So you can sort of see. So half those things. Well, I don't read really any of them because you'll just get in your head.
Yeah. And it's not going to change the job.
It's not going to change anything. And it's like people,
could change the director's cut Blu-ray.
Yeah. So.
What was the movie to you? Like, what was it that you wanted to do with the movie? I mean, just in terms of like you've had this thing going on since 2005.
Yeah, it felt like after all the Descendant stuff, it's like that fantastic journey, but this is that thing that you wrote so long ago that you just can't let go of, you know, that you, that was your baby from the very beginning, and it was so close to getting made. So everything just became about trying to get this done.
Yeah.
And we got to a place where we could have had it done. This would have been, I don't know how many years in, but let's just say it was like, you know, from this moment, it was 5 years back, and the movie was in turnaround, and we had 3 more years before the script would be back in our possession without all the hands of studios on it. And we had a moment where you were like, well, we can either make, you know, a studio said, you can make it with these actors or not. And those actors, while good actors, weren't right for these parts. Right. So you had to make a decision there. Like, you know what? We're just going to sit on it. And so we waited 3 years for the script to be out of, free of everything, save for some money, you know, against it that was spent in the very beginning, for us to be able to say, oh, we have our thing. It's just ours, you know. So that was sort of the reason why I think we stuck with it.
Because is that the ultimate symbol of success, do you think, where you go, I made my thing my own way and no one's told me how to do it?
I mean, it's certainly probably a very gratifying feeling, you know, that you sort of decided, you know what, we're going to put our names on this. We're going to be first-time directors with this. We might fall on our faces. You know, it might not come out right. Everything could go wrong, but at least we're going to try to do it our way. And I think that is, I can only, for me, I would say that's so far like the best experience and the biggest reward we've had.
Certainly, yeah. If you go back to like what we were talking about before with Adopted, that pilot script, the first thing we did, and it got changed so much, and you watch the finished product and you're like, this is so far kind of from what the original script was and the original concept was, you know, just as far as everything. And you can't help but just sort of feel like, oh, I just wish we had gotten a fair chance to do it our way, in a sense. And so this was really the first time where we kind of could say that. Like, it was exactly what we wanted to do. Yeah. There was
no you know, certainly, telling us.
Yeah, we didn't have any studio telling us these notes, or it has to be this way, or you have to change this person, or this arc has to be bigger, and so forth. Like, it really was exactly what we wanted to do. And you make compromises for
financial
time
and,
you know,
and all the things that are against you while you make the movie.
Yeah.
But not the ones where people are just weighing in on the opinion of what it should be.
And then also sort of fun and scary is like, oh, I can't blame this on anyone else if it doesn't go
well.
Totally.
Yeah, and you'll just sort of accept it. You're like, all right, this is it. And that's the scary thing.
Guess we should have had that coffee mug in the scene.
And a coffee mug in the scene to sort of get rid of all that exposition.
I do like that part of it. I really do like that, having the owning responsibility of like, oh, well, if it doesn't work out, like, yeah, well, you know, I tried something and it was my fault. At least it was my fault and not someone else's fault.
And that's the great thing about a partnership, too, is that all the shitty things that happened in the way of a back are Jim's fault.
Right.
And everything that was success was me.
Yeah.
That's
all right, that's all that we have time for. Four guys.
What's great is we probably run long, and that's a great thing to edit out.
But when you are directing with someone, you're writing with someone, at what point there must be some sort of an internal formula where you're like, okay, a lot of times we'll both agree on stuff. Sometimes we will not agree on stuff. How strongly will I have to feel about something to push, and how, you know, like, or what point do I go, all right, I'll go ahead and trust Nat, or I'll trust Jim.
Yes. Yes, completely. I think we've known each other for so long now that it's sort of secondhand. I think you get a feel. Jim gets that look in his eye.
There it is, the Nebushi one.
Yeah, now,
don't cross me.
My I have a hard time saying my intention, but then selling it with my voice.
Right.
Don't cross me. You know, it's not really angry.
Your words,
it's almost
seem
comical.
Angry, but you're no,
I'm
come
saying,
out that way.
I'm gonna kill you.
Don't give me sadness.
Yeah. You know, it's just that I have a hard time. I can't.
That voice just reminded me that you're in one of my favorite movies, Sky High.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, that is such a great movie.
I was doing that on purpose. Finally, get a Sky High shout out.
It's a fun. I really like Sky High.
It's actually a lot of fun.
The year it came out, I was at Comic Con, and my girlfriend at the time, she's like, "Oh, those are the guys that made Sky High," and I was like, "Oh!" And I just seen it. I was so excited about it. Like, ran over to him. I was like, "Hey, I really love Sky High." They were like, "Oh, thanks." It was like the first time. I was like, "Oh, thanks. Cool. See you around." I was like, "That." Okay.
Yeah.
You sure you don't want to go to Nobu?
Yeah.
Also, you're not funny. Oh, no, shit.
Oh, man. Is that
you?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Just because, you know, it's that superhero stuff I think is so much fun. I wish I had a power. I didn't have a power. That was my only... I asked them.
Your voice.
My voice, my cackle was pretty much all I had.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun.
A dancing around jig.
Yeah, just pretty much. It was just dancing,
gestury,
gestury, laughing, and yeah, that's about it. It was a lot of fun though.
So as we're sort of winding this down, anything about community that you can mention or talk about, or anything specific that you people?
Well, nothing really specific because I mean, Dan already said, you know, we are doing an animated, completely animated episode. But he said that at Comic-Con, so that's nothing new. But, you know, Jonathan Banks is joined us for many, many episodes.
Walter, just put the gun down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's fantastic. So he's already started working.
What about something we don't know, Jim? Something really
I'm
inside.
I'm just trying to sound like there's something interesting that some people might not know.
It'd be great if you could tell us something and then you got in trouble for it.
I can't. I got nothing. Yeah, I don't know.
They get mad and they drive you to the border of Hollywood and drop you on your bags off.
You're done. And you are done. It.
And that's how
you
discover
are West
the mountain.
Hollywood sheriff problem now.
the lines are really getting drawn now. You really cannot cross. You're in my jurisdiction now.
They've sequestered me in the Pacific Design Center.
I feel like I read that.
I'm in the blue part.
Go sit in the big chair.
The big chair.
Go sit in the $200,000 big chair.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's worth it.
Well, if you got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not spend it on a chair?
Make it.
So, McHale.
Nat. Yeah.
And we bring it back.
Well
you
done.
You stupid head.
Well, so, and you're Nat Faxon on Twitter, and then you're the Rash is TV Ugly on Twitter. And way, way back, it was in theaters, but when is it coming
it's
to
still,
VOD?
Still in theaters.
It's still in theaters now. You can still see it. It'll be
a
few more weeks at least. And then I think the DVD is around like October 22nd.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So maybe we'll.
Very specific date for it to be around.
That's vaguely
somewhere around October 22nd in the morning.
Yeah,
I don't
morning.
Know.
I don't know, guys. but there's some extras.
Oh, they might have done a commentary track.
Oh, mine's so bad.
Well, this will be perfect. Then we'll you know, we can either put this up closer to the DVD release or put it up now if you want people to go see it in theaters. It's totally whatever works best for you guys. Are you working on? Have you
All of that? Would
okay,
be great. Yeah.
Well,
put it up five
re-release
times.
It.
Yeah. It's gonna get a re-release towards Oscar season. Let's be.
Are you working on anything? Did you start working on anything else, or are you still? Just
no, we're back. We was that
just still coasting?
Just still, yeah. And,
yes.
And no one, yeah, exactly. On fumes. We're back to just sort of in the writing mode. So we're writing, cool. Working with Searchlight again, writing a way back size small movie for them, that an original thing we pitched to them, sort of dipping into our lives again, family wise, and then we're doing an action comedy for Kristen Wiig, which very exciting. We pitched her this idea, and obviously we're in the groundlings with Kristen and known her for years, and so we just sort of pitched her something a little bit darker in tone for us.
Yeah.
But eclectic characters, which is much like what we like. So
did you guilt her into it with the voice?
Would you just do it?
Please, would you do it?
No. No. Okay.
Voice.
I could never say. Yeah. We'll just do it.
Yeah. It was it was really easy once she saw my range of characters.
Well, thank you guys for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to see you, and congratulations on everything. Sincerely,
thank you.
I guess come back when you're ready to. When something else that you want to
stretch.
Yeah.
Stretch.
So you guys, where did you go to school?
Chris, the guy listening to this in his car isn't at his destination yet. Yeah. Stretch it out.
What about the other guy that is? Yeah. He's just waiting for Dan.
Oh, God. He's got to get in the house and see his kid. Fucking end it, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Take it aside.
Just put music on.
Bruce Gunner!
I'm here.
Scotty, can you say enjoy your burrito to them?
Enjoy your burrito.
Bruce, are the burritos here?
Espas in the back. His burritos hot.
Everything's in the back.
Everything's in the back.
He's always out front and everyone's in the back. What
I might have thrown out the cocaine and kept the body bag. I apologize.
I just thought it sounded like a Miami Vice extra.
Yeah.
So it's always been cocaine for some reason. Yeah. Yeah.
He's the under he's the under five guy in Miami
yes.
Vice.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And he can't. He doesn't know if it's if the guy's his boss yeah, or he just calls the guy boss. Yeah. Hey, boss, the cocaine's in the back. Or hey, boss, the cocaine's in the back.
The subtle reads.
Yeah.
Where he's going with it. We're gonna figure out your relationship later. Yeah, yeah. So that really helps us.
Oh, a three-episode arc.
Your line reading course with Jonah Ray includes how to tell the boss where the cocaine is.
Hey, boss, cocaine. It's in the back.
I'm not your boss. There's no. This is only one room. Bad improv.
And there's,
let's take it again, Jonah.
Yes, of course.
Somebody in the car just repeated.
Jonah, what would you do? What would Bruce do if maybe the cocaine's in the front?
Oh, he'd turn around.
Yeah, that's the right answer.
It's not getting better than that. So wow. Spike these things.
Just melt.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 20% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Nerdist9.
Once upon a beat! Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.